The truth was like an avalanche hitting David all at once. First, it was just a sad story that Nathan had brought to him, a tragedy inviting outrage. He heard it, but he did not enter it. He commented on the injustice and stepped aside. But here's the deal. The prophet brought it home. And David was buried beneath the weight of what he had done. He had taken Bathsheba, another man's wife, and he had sent her husband, Uriah the Hittite, to the front lines so that he would be killed. David was crushed when he acknowledged his own behavior, his own self-deceit. His own identity was a mirror raised to him, and he was devastated. Anyone who has wandered through old avalanche paths knows how long it takes for recovery. So much transformation happens very slowly. And so we have been handed a psalm that we can take our time to read, to pray. Psalm 51. Best in the whole. It's the passionate admission by the petitioner that life is a mess. It has been identified as David's prayer after the mess with Bathsheba and Uriah. It is a prayer of need. The speaker comes empty-handed with no pretense and no cover-up, asking for newness, for a clean heart, and a new spirit. From time to time, we all need newness. Sometimes we are self-aware and we seek it, but other times not so much, and we can resist new truth. So I have been enjoying John Bell's chant that we sing each week at 10:30. Because it asks us to present ourselves for transformation. Take me as I am, summon out what I shall be. Set your seal upon my heart and live in me. Our gospel story today offers an opportunity to look at that in the crowd that came to follow Jesus. Jesus did take people as they were, did invite them to live in newness through healing, through a kind word. He met people. John's gospel tells us that it was around the Passover time when the crowd first came and there was the miracle of the loaves and the fishes. So it was a time that filled people's memories with hope and expectation and of God's liberating power in the past to bring them through the desert, to give them food for their hunger, to find water in the desert, to release them from oppression, from slavery. And because of the power of that experience with the loaves and the fishes, they thought, oh good, let's make him king. But Jesus didn't want to be king. Not that kind of a king. And so they said, oh, we perceive you are a prophet. And he was a prophet, speaking truth. Sometimes unsettling truth. After the loaves and fishes, he withdrew from them a little bit and even withdrew from the disciples, but then joined them and crossed the Sea of Galilee to get to the other side, where a dialogue is going to begin about his identity. Actually, the dialogue continues. These are part of the I am statements in John's Gospel, and we are given one in chapter 4 when Jesus meets the Samaritan woman at the well, and they have a dialogue about what she knows about faith and what water is and isn't, and Jesus is saying to her, "I'm the living water. Oh, sir, give me this water that I may thirst no more and not come to the well." The needs of the body exist, even when Jesus says, "I am the living water." So now he's going to expand that. "I'm the living bread." Oh, what does that mean? What do you mean, "I'm not going to hunger or thirst anymore"? Jesus wants his listeners to think beyond the needs of the body and go deeper into the needs of the soul. And this is such a dense portion of John that the church has said in its wisdom, "You're going to spend 5 weeks here chewing on all of these things, all of this newness that Jesus is announcing." The Johannine community learned bit by bit how to understand Jesus' identity. And some will engage and continue with him. The more provocative his statements get, some will pivot and leave. Growth, I think, for us comes slowly. It unfolds, our transformation unfolds in faith, in stages, just like everything else that we try to understand that is not familiar. So the crowd is up for it, and they say, "Well, okay, what must we do to do the work of God?" Jesus doesn't tell them that they need to prepare for coffee hour every week and bring more loaves and fish. He gives them faith instructions. So to do the work of God, what is required, what is needed, is faith. Faith in the promises of God. And it will be faith in the identity of Jesus. And this approach to their lives is supposed to go on every day, not just occasionally. What is the true source of your life? What feeds your soul? How is it that you live as fully as you can and find energy and purpose for yourself as well as for others? So the crowd says, "Okay, we have faith. How about this? God provided manna in the desert. So that was bread, right? Moses gave us the bread." And Jesus does this sweet pivot point of correction. "No, it was God who sent that for you. And God did send it for them because they were complaining. They were hungry. They were tired. And so God fed them." But this is not about a meal at the past. This is a meal, an ongoing meal, an ongoing feeding for now as well as for the future. And the church in its wisdom says, "Come here. Come here as often as you can. Come to be fed. Come to have a sip of life-giving wine because you need it. Because we need it. We need it to clear our hearts, clean our hearts, and have new spirits renewed within us. Some days, we could do it more than once. How is it that we carry the taste of this bread and wine with us? How do we experience it as food for our journey, as the cup of compassion? Many years ago, when my three daughters were young, I had three under the age of four, and they got sick at one time. They had a tendency to do that, so I was either spending all my time doing laundry or not getting enough sleep. And I managed to get them cleaned up enough to get to the pediatrician's office one day. Anthony Piccirillo took one look at me and put me in his office and disappeared with the girls. When he came back, he opened the little refrigerator under his desk and took out a bottle of Manischewitz wine. Now, that's the sweet Jewish wine used for Passover in some homes. Anyway, in a 30cc medicine cup, he poured the wine, gave it to me, left the room, shut the door, and I didn't see him or the girls for half an hour. Now, I know that this was a temporary fix for me, but I have remembered that action for more than 40 years. And more than once, I have described it as a sacrament. My soul was fed. I was seen in my distress, and I was accompanied. I was able to go back to taking care of my children. The deeper truth of faith that serves others, of love and compassion that transforms, does exactly what I experienced. It sees, it offers, it blesses, and it sends. Perhaps I should keep a bottle of Manischewitz in my office, but I don't have an office, so I keep it here. I keep it in my heart. And maybe it's enough to keep operating out of that memory as a life of faith continually unfolds. That's what Jesus is promising. Small sips of wine, small bits of bread, the very body and blood of our lives handed back to us again and again. Amen.